Bamboo Insights, valuable knowledge from amazing experts.
Hello, dear listeners. I'm Ayaka, your host. Welcome to the special edition of the Empowerment Bamboo podcast, Phoenix Journey. In this special episode, you'll be introduced to the work of Phoenix. We define Phoenix as a young project maker. In the Phoenix series, stories of young entrepreneurs working on bamboo will be introduced every 6 months period. I'm sure that the stories of their progress, the problem, the success, the failures, and more will be your inspiration to all listeners. In this conversation, you'll be introduced to the work of Fortunate Fapohunda from CEO of Blue Sky Bamboo. Now, enjoy the show. Welcome, Fortunate, for this conversation.
Thank you.
I'm really happy to have you here. And
yeah,
so let us start the conversation. How you became interested in working with bamboo? Maybe that's the first question.
Yeah, sure. I studied in product design or industrial design, and I did well in terms of finishing well at uni, getting an award, and looking to make my mark in the world to sort of do something great, you know, that sort of thing. Ego trip in terms of young student wanting to make the name. I ended up working for a lighting design company actually in Northampton while I lived in London. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the work I did involved the use of materials, which later on I wasn't so proud of. In this case, plastic, metal, steel, that sort of thing. But 90% of the byproduct which we use was plastic. And I sort of worked with this for years, after like 4 or 5 years. And I just kind of kept thinking to myself, what are we doing with the stuff we're not actually using? Because I would design the stuff, I'll have prototypes lying around just in my room, you know, just everywhere. I'm thinking, so what do I do with that? Generally, I'm the kind of guy that will upcycle something. Mm. And a lot of the stuff I've got, I couldn't do that with them. I'm thinking, hang on, how long will it take for these things to disintegrate? And I'm talking, this is the year 2008. And it dawned on me that it would take about 400 years before something I was involved with would disintegrate. That broke my heart. And I thought, oh my God, I don't think I'm doing any good by the planet if that's the case. I don't think the direction of travel for the product we're making is actually any good, because if it's going to be toxic and it's going to be sitting for 400 years, it's no good to no one. It's definitely not good for the planet. That got me on a trajectory. But saying that, my lecturer back in 1998 said to me, to a bunch of us, that you guys need to understand sustainability. I'm like, what's that? You know, said the wheels are going to come off in the future and you guys have to fix it. I'm like, I don't think so. we didn't get it. But what they were trying to say to us is that at some point, a lot of our need to create, a lot of our need to build, a lot of our need to try and meet the demands of the masses lies heavily on the use of resources, which is not infinite, it's finite. Not only that, the way we go about processing them is cause there's a cost and effect. And we couldn't pull data, or we could not have a deep understanding for that meant as students. So we really didn't take it seriously. But coming into the industry, it dawned on me when I saw what's lying around in the room everywhere. I'm thinking to myself, this is not right. Something's not right here. And I began to have a conscience in terms of how I see myself and my responsibility within the company I was working for as a designer. And I went on a journey to the extent when I got married and had children, I said to people, please don't buy my kids any plastic toys. That was one of my first stands. and it sort of it grated on me that something needs to be done. But I stepped away from that. In 2017, there was a report on BBC for the way straws and plastic bits are find themselves in the ocean, and we're talking about microplastic, the indigenous birds of, I don't know, somewhere in Antarctic where the penguins live, they're eating up plastics from the seashore, and you're finding these things in the marine life. And in short, they find a plastic bag, a shopping bag, at the bottom of the Mariana Trench, the deepest place on the earth. I'm thinking, oh my God, this is us breaking earth right here, right now. This is not happening in some dystopian future. It's happening right here, right now. Then I said to myself, this is not right. We need to do something. And generally, when I say the question to myself to say, we need to do something, I always have that voice at the back of my mind saying, why don't you do something? So I said, okay, then I would. So I started researching to say, what are the alternatives to using things like, I know, plastic straws or a plastic spoon? I started asking the question for toothbrush. I'm like, there must be an alternative. Then I did the research. Then I realized my parents are African from Nigeria. They used for toothbrush, they used what they call a chewing stick. Now, chewing stick goes back thousands of years. And this special wood, this special stick, they would chew it and it will cleanse their teeth, it will get rid of the bacteria, and they've got perfect teeth. My parents have never been to the dentist in their life. And they're 74 years old, never been to the dentist. I've had a couple of teeth removed from my mouth. I'm thinking, why are they so different? They had what was very much a natural, unique thing, which is coming from nature that they used. Nothing synthetic. They were still using everything else, such as even toothpaste and toothbrushes, still use that. But generally, they relied on the natural resource. And their forefathers did the same thing. People used to use coal to brush their teeth. I'm thinking, okay, if it worked for them, why can it not work for us? What is it that we've exchanged for what we've got now? Is it actually better now, or is it worse than it used to be? So those thought process got me on the journey to asking questions to want to solve one problem. Then I realized the problem's bigger than just a couple of toothbrush here, a couple of straws there. And I said, okay, right, if the problem is a lot bigger than that, let's go back. Can we tell creatives like myself on a whole to say, you've got to try new materials? And how do you go about telling them to try new materials? I said, well, you've got to find the new materials for them in its abundance for them to actually work with. And I thought, okay, what's there in its abundance? And I thought, trees are abundant. Actually, no, they're not. Because if we chop them down, we're going to lose the forest and therefore we're going to suffocate. I'm thinking, that's not going to work. So through the research, I came across bamboo. And it's been used in Africa, it's been used in China and in South America, all around the world, and they call it the poor man's timber. And I got a report from the research that showed a building in China that stood for 1,000 years made out of bamboo. I'm like, what? 1,000 years made out of a tree? It's impossible. I'm sure this is some fake story. I read more into it and I realized, oh my God, these guys have pushed what you can do with this material to the next level. And I thought, well, if they can do it, why is the rest of the world not doing it? It's simple. It's not a poor man's timber. Actually, it's the best thing on the planet. We're just not aware of it. And it's sitting right there under our noses, and we're treading on it, walking on it every day. And it then got me thinking, well, if that's the case, rather than trying to create wonderful things, why not just create the opportunity for creatives, the industries, the consuming part of our society, the opportunity to generate this resource and give it to them so it's not affecting the bigger picture of forestations in, say, Brazil or mid-Africa in the sub-Saharan African side of the world. It doesn't affect what is needed for climate to sort of work properly or for the planet to function in the right way. And we can then abate a lot of the mistakes or perhaps remove a lot of the CO2s we've caused, and that will help us. And it also gives us material, and it can feed people. I'm thinking, this is a magical plant, from my research. And that really got me thinking. And then I began to sort of go to meet with a lot of professional bodies. I had a lot of friends from Batu Bambu, like Fred Hannaday. I went to the Germany Expo, the first European Bible Expo last year, where the network allowed me to sort of talk to a lot of people and express my views in terms of what I think could be done. I understand it's a hard graph to sort of get people to think differently, especially when they're used to a certain way of life. Definitely, it's a hard graft. But Rome wasn't built in a day, as they said. And I've always thought, shouldn't the government do something about this? Then, under the same breath, I thought to myself, actually, government don't start a revolution. People start a revolution. That means you've got to take ownership of that and go out there and do your very best. It's like Rosa Parks. She sat on a bus, and rather than waiting for someone to sort of change the whole thought process in America, she goes, "No, I'm sitting where I am. And if you don't like it, call the police." And he did. And then she changed the whole game. It requires people like individuals like yourself, myself, to say, right, I believe this is the right course of direction for the world to follow. It has worked for thousands of years. We're just putting it to the side because quick fix sounds like a good idea. It's like, sorry to say the word, fast food, the famous fast food with the Arches and Kings. And so, that's not a decent meal. If you want a proper meal, you get green food, cooked. It might take some time, but it's healthier for you. The same process is needed in terms of the way we go about working on materials that are sustainable. We don't want quick fix. Plastics, rubber, synthetic neoprenes, all of these things are great. Don't get me wrong, they did advance a lot of the stuff we've got today in terms of technology, but it's now time for us to reconsider how they can be replaced. That material can then be said, well, plastic has been great, but now we can have another resource, another material that's kind to the environment, would disintegrate within 3 to 4 years, and then we could sort of use this again. Good for the ecosystem, use it again. Everything in nature is a full cycle. And if it's not doing that, if the materials we're working with as a designer or creative or the industries are not doing this sort of recycling process, then it's no good. We're not advancing in any sense of the word. We're still backwards. So the bamboo process and the material that it offers, that it's just an absolute dream come true.
Feel the big passion for of
Oh
yours
yeah.
from the way you share the
Absolutely.
story with me. But then now I wanted to move on to the question, like, have you ever encountered any unexpected challenges, like while working on bamboo projects? And then
In Africa, in Nigeria, where we talked to natives about the possibility of looking at bamboo, they were like, nah, there's nothing to it. They've never considered what can be the application it possesses until that was explained, and then they could see the possibilities, then it became a real thing for them. So, a lot of videos, a lot of explanation to say this is what you can do. All of a sudden, that changed the ball game. Now, I've got friends in Cameroon who are also doing similar projects, and they're like, yeah, we're beginning to see people's attitude changing about bamboo. Put it this way, it is considered as pest in certain parts of the sub-Saharan Africa. They don't want to see bamboo on farmland. They don't want to see bamboo anywhere. They try and kill it off as quickly as possible because it propagates really quickly. It just grows, and they don't like it, so they want to kill it off and burn it and do all sorts. So having to explain to them to say, you do need this. Believe it or not, this is good for you, good for the planet, good for the earth, good for soil revitalization, good for the water table, and explaining all of that this is naturally reoccurring, it helps. It has been helping Earth for billions of years. We're just none the wiser. So explaining how they could benefit from that, how that could be translated into funds for them, that has won them over. On a governmental level, it's a different story. Say certain governments in sub-Saharan Africa have they're part of IMBA, and they've seen they've heard of what bamboo can do, but they've been very slow to sort of pick up their mantle and run with it. So individuals like myself and others are coming in to try and say, right, we're just going to go do it anyway, whether you're doing it or not. So there's some obstacles, because if you're going to say to a certain group of people, we want X amount of land to do these things, we're like, nah, we're going to use that for food. And they're going to say, well, you can't take the food away from people. So there's a fine balance where you're going to try to strike with them in terms of running a bamboo plantation or perhaps running a bamboo farm to sort of say to them, this is profitable. It takes a lot of convincing and a lot of you just have to sort of get into their heads and go, right, this works. We do need this. The world needs it. And yeah, getting the message across, it's one of the biggest challenges.
Thank you. Now I wanted to more dive into your personal journey. What personal internal factors do you consider before granting yourself permissions to start that project, like your bamboo project? And then how do you overcome self-doubt or hesitation when embarking on a new endeavor? Like, it's more personal story, but like, if you could share a little bit to the audience,
every day is a school day. Every day is a school day, I'm telling you. It's when I first started off, I wasn't so sure. I thought, crikey, I am not known for this. No one knows me in any sense of the word. So I'd made a list of people to call, and I thought, right, I need somebody to point me in the right direction. So on my first call, before I made the call, I was so much in dread that I wasn't so sure if this person would listen to me at all. And Fred Hunter is the first guy I called. And, you know, he's big authority on the subject. He's been going at this since 1996. He's been in the industry for a long time. And when I called him and he said to me, oh, dude, you need to sort of look at me, talk to me from a consultative point of view, and there's going to be a charge for that. I'm like, dude, I don't have any friends on me right now, but I've got a passion for this and I'm trying to help people. I just want to do this to help and change lives. And he took me on a journey, and he was such a fantastic guy. I was so grateful that somebody could take me under their wings and go, right, okay, this is what you need to know. And from that point on, we became great friends, and we've gone to exhibition together in Germany. And just meeting people like Juan Martinez from South America. So I've got friends from South America. He's a brilliant individual, an amazing human. Again, people who are selfless. What you will discover, what I have discovered in this journey, that those who truly have a passion for this, people who do this without even getting paid, they just want to change stuff. They really want to change the world, and they want to bring about the difference in the way we should all be crying for the difference, you know, for the change, I should say. And that has helped me, because there are times when I thought to myself, oh, this is such a heavy task. I don't think this is too big. And every time I say that, somebody said to me, it's not big enough. I'm like, whoa. I'm like, what do you mean it's not big enough? This is a lot bigger than I anticipated. Someone just said to me, you need to go bigger. I'm like, what? It's go big or go home. I'm like, what's going on? And I'm having this conversation, internal conversation with myself, that if you're truly going to bring about change, you can't look at the size of the problem. You can't let that be daunting. Otherwise, that size will just overwhelm you. You'll be overcome by the enormity of the issue. Then you'll get nowhere. But if you just look for the reason, the why. And the why is what's literally pushed me and driven me, got me talking, got me pushing for funds, got me doing that. It's the reason. I see people's faces I've never met before in my life. I seen those people are happy, working, using the material. I could see their faces, and I've never met them yet, but I'm seeing their faces. And that's what gets me up in the morning, such as, I want to go see those people. I want to make sure we work hard enough to meet those people.
I want to hear more about your stories, but do you want to share that any closing messages to the audience? Like, I would be happy to hear your message to the audience.
There's no situation that's too big that can be changed. If Gandhi can protest silently and quietly and change the world, then any big situation can be confronted. If Mother Teresa can do the same, and changeable that any huge situation can be confronted. We can't give up saying, well, the world is falling apart and we're too small to do anything. There's an old African proverb that says, if you think you're too small and you're not valuable, lock yourself in a room with one mosquito overnight in the dark and see what happens. It's you know, the mosquito is never going to let you sleep. So therefore, it means we don't give up on the dream. Again, forgive the proverbs, but the journey of the 1,000 mile begins by just one step. So good luck to us all.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
That's all for today. I'm really looking forward to connecting with you again in the next episode. See you!